So we just had a brief conversation about compounding interest and how it does a lot of the work for you in terms of growth. But a lot of people don't factor in the role that that has on your sense of achievement or fulfillment.
Yeah.
So if you set a goal that seems really far away at first and then you achieve that goal, and then achieving that goal becomes the norm, you're going to need to adjust your mile markers,
yes,
right? You're going to risk losing a sense of fulfillment in that effort, or you're going to have to find a completely different source of fulfillment entirely. And I think that's something that a lot of people who find themselves very focused on a financial milestone struggle with, because once they achieve it, it's gone, mm-hmm, and they feel a little bit lost. It's like, well, I thought my life would be
different
or, yeah, better, or that people would see me differently. But that is not always the case. And I think it's especially true and relevant for passive investors. Welcome to the Rich and Regular podcast presented by Success, where we explore life at the intersection of money. I'm Julian.
And I'm Kirsten. Today, we're talking about what to expect as you achieve your financial milestones.
Okay.
Yes. And you know, my first reaction to achieving anything is to throw a party.
I'm not surprised.
I mean, I grew up celebrating everything. I mean, I come from a long line of celebrating women, so I've never really struggled with celebrating along the way.
Yeah.
But I think today we want to focus on the folks that we run into who struggle with that middle part, you know, that space between hitting one financial goal and the next one.
Yeah. So I did not come from a long line of celebrating women. For me, I'm pretty much like your standard, you know, celebrations. Mm-hmm. It's like birthdays, high school graduation, college graduation. If you went to grad school, then maybe they'll do that again, too. But I certainly don't have a lot of memories or big bashes or anything.
Did you celebrate every birthday, or are you one of those people that just does like the big ones, you know, 30, 40?
I don't know.
Did you do something big for your 33rd birthday? Well, that's a big one. That's the Jesus year.
Oh, I do not remember my 33rd birthday.
38th birthday.
So I went through a stretch for a while where in my 30s, which sounds weird to say, but it's real, that pretty much anything that required signing a waiver is what I wanted to do.
Oh, Lord.
So I jumped out of a plane on my 30th birthday. I think my 31st, I went spelunking and spent the night in a cave.
I've never done that.
Yeah. For me, it was all about like, what's the next thing that we can do to just risk it all?
Okay.
That's how I'm going to choose to celebrate.
And then you met me, and then, the old ball and chain.
Yeah.
And slowed you down.
Stopped signing waivers ever since. Yeah, it's, so anyway, that's been my whole approach. And obviously achieving financial milestones is a little different, mm-hmm, but they are just as fun. So quick question, over the years, what have been some of your favorite or our favorite milestones and celebrations?
Oh my goodness, I have so many. I remember this was right after I met you, but celebrating the first time I was able to pay more than the minimum on my credit card. Mm. Because I remember feeling so bad about how I got there. And there was this month that we got 3 paychecks instead of 2. And I took the extra paycheck and used it to pay the fine that's associated with breaking your lease.
Yeah.
And I broke the lease in my fancy midtown apartment and moved into one that was literally like half the price and half the size. And because of that, I was able to use that new surplus to pay down my credit card debt.
Yeah.
And so that, like, the whole process of moving all of my stuff and touching all of the things that I had bought all the years and realizing they're not going to fit in this new place just really like burned itself in my brain as like a milestone that didn't necessarily feel good at the time, but led to really good, you know, results.
I was just about to say, like, I can imagine that there were some mixed emotions with that, because you were probably accustomed to splurging, let's say, anytime you get an extra check or like a bonus check. But this is the first time that you were probably making a responsible decision,
right,
but then also kind of feeling like pretty good about what it was doing for you and the position that it was putting you in.
Yeah.
I would imagine that was pretty empowering.
It was. It eventually was.
Yeah.
But I also remember paying off the mortgage.
Yeah.
It was my birthday, my 33rd birthday, and I had taken the day off of work. And I remember waking up and wondering, like, what do I wear to the bank to pay off my mortgage? Is a t-shirt and jeans fine? Or do I need like a pantsuit?
Like, and I remember that day because, you know, first of all, there's really no reason to go into the bank.
Right.
So I remember thinking that too. And I was like, gosh, I can't think of any time I've ever like planned to go into the bank other than
felt like my grandma
opening an account or something like that. But like I had scheduled a date to go and what time.
Have an appointment.
Yeah, it was an entire, you know, thing. It was like a doctor's appointment. Yeah, it was so weird. But I remember that day. That was a big one for me. That's certainly like one of the biggest financial milestones. But I'll say, I mean, that was 8 years ago.
Yeah.
And I don't want to say it's kind of worn off. For me, the day itself has worn off. The months after haven't. I remember the months after for sure. Like that's when it really, really started to settle in. The day off, I want to say we just went and got a burger afterwards or something. Like it was really
Well, we didn't just get a burger. Do you remember how we celebrated?
I remember how we celebrated. No, I don't remember how. I do. I remember deciding to buy like a case of really good wine.
Yeah,
that was a big upgrade for us because it was at first it was like, all right, anytime we were celebrating a financial milestone, it was like, let's celebrate with a really nice bottle of wine. And then this one, it was like, yeah, no, not a bottle.
We're 12.
Let's get the case.
12 of them.
And it was like, oh, wow, you get a discount on getting the case. So it was like a win-win overall. I still felt good about it. And we just had an entire case and we could like celebrate for like the next several weeks. And there was no special wine. It was all special.
It was all special, yeah. And even then we were still like money conscious. Like we could have bought a case of, you know, all $50 wines. But we were like, let's
throw a couple of $50 in there.
We did a couple of 50s, but most of them were like in the $20 to $30 range per bottle, which was a huge splurge for us at the time. And then we got one like nice bottle that was over $100.
Yeah. It was a fun time. I can't even imagine doing that now. I would look at that and be like, oh God, I don't want to drink all this wine. One is enough, but yes, you know, and for the record, we did not drink all of that in one night. It took us a couple of weeks to get through it all. But it was certainly a big, big milestone for us.
Yeah.
So this is in part why we wanted to talk about this, because obviously it brings up a lot of memories. And I think for people who've gone through it, it may bring you back. But for those who are just starting out or maybe still in the early phases of trying to achieve and setting out a financial plan, you should probably know a couple of things. And hopefully we can share from our perspective and give you a couple of recommendations of what you can anticipate as you are checking off some of these financial milestones, which leads to the question, what would you say are some of the biggest financial milestones?
Yes. And I don't want to disregard the little milestones. There are obviously a lot of smaller ones that are very valuable.
I don't know why I didn't think of this before. We should call them like pebbles.
Pebbles.
Milestones.
Oh, milestones and mile pebbles.
See what I did there.
It's not your best work.
Pebbles.
Not your best work, but you know, what we're calling pebbles, you know, personalities like Dave Ramsey has called them the baby steps, whatever they are. But we're going to focus on the big ones because those are the ones that feel like they have so much space in between them.
Yeah.
So I think I'll start with what most people start with is some sort of salary goal. You know, you graduate from college and you think the day I make six figures or the day I make $75,000 or whatever is going to be like the day my life changes. Mm-hmm. Then there's debt freedom. So after college, if you have student loans or if you have credit card debt or anything else, like there's this idea of complete debt freedom.
Yep.
Hitting the first $100,000 in net worth is a goal for a lot of people.
Oh, yeah.
Like, that's very meaningful. And then buying your first home for some people is a goal. You know, our cinematographer just purchased his first home. I think he's 28 or 29. And he recorded this Instagram story where he literally squealed with joy.
Oh, gosh. I watched it
like 50 times. I just told him to save it and play it for himself the first time he gets that first maintenance bill. Because you want to remember.
Thank you.
That excitement is like lightning in a bottle. Remind yourself of how excited you were for this thing.
Yeah, you're right. I didn't see that on Instagram, but I remember shooting him a text message as we were following up on something and letting him know, because it was raining outside at the point of us recording this, just so everyone knows, like Hurricane Ida is just coming through and we're seeing a bit of the outer band effects here. Mm-hmm. In Atlanta, obviously, it's not nearly what it happened in Louisiana, but we're seeing some pretty heavy rain. And I remember thinking of him and saying, I remember what that feels like too. Being a new homeowner, first of all, you've got to get accustomed to all of the weird sounds in the house. Mm-hmm. But that first heavy rain, mm-hmm. you don't know to go outside to look for puddles, but you probably should. And I saw him a text and said, hey, you might want to go downstairs or, check the attic or just those little things. So if you're a homeowner out there, you know exactly what I'm talking about. But to your point, yes, all of those I think are fantastic and really, really great and popular milestones.
Yes, and financial achievement. I mean, financial independence. Achieving financial independence.
Yes, yes, yes. That's a big one. That's a lofty one, certainly, for a lot of people. I think that debt freedom is certainly one that a vast majority of people are looking to achieve, and mm-hmm. they have sort of pebbles or tiny milestones within that sort of process of achieving debt freedom. It could be like a bit of a countdown as they're getting there. But I think one of the things that people don't realize that they're going to experience there is the lack of hoopla associated with paying down debt. And I remember this for sure, because when you're all about it, like, it is pretty life consuming.
Yes.
And I remember pretty much every single time I opened up my computer, I had the money in my checking account, and I sent the payment, and I was like so excited to submit it every single time. Mm-hmm. And I remember refreshing the screen and thinking, like, nothing happens.
No.
So not to be a Debbie Downer for anyone who's out there, nothing is going to happen.
No.
Like, I remember, kind of old school, I thought like the solitaire was going to pop up on the screen. Like, I thought maybe someone would hop off the screen and say, congratulations, you did it.
Yeah, there's nothing. No. Like, I even expected a full sentence. It was just like, thank you, your payment has been received. And it was like, that was the last one, though.
Please wait 24 to 48 hours before.
I was like, I want a new sentence. That was the last payment.
Refreshing, like, no, it doesn't change colors.
Nothing.
No music. Nothing.
I took a screenshot, but it wasn't even meaningful because it doesn't say like your balance is now down to zero. It looks like every other payment you've made.
Sure does. Yep. So I hate to be a Debbie Downer, folks, but that is something that you are certainly going to have to create your own celebration experience for, because the interface on the credit card system or the student loan payment system or whatever it is, no one is going to do anything. No balloons will come out.
Yeah.
Nothing.
Yeah. And the fact that you're expecting it is kind of like expecting your ex to give a toast at your wedding. Like,
oh my God.
It's kind of a breakup between you and the bank. And they don't celebrate it. It's the same format as before.
They absolutely do not. Even when you think about our mortgage payoff, that was an interesting situation.
Yeah, I remember that day specifically and this attempt to upsell us into another product by the banker.
Immediately.
It's like he created this fake milestone for us. Like, well, now that you've paid off your mortgage, you're going to want to do this next thing with us. And I was just like, what?
Yeah.
That's not in any of the books.
Yeah. And I'm trying really hard not to name drop the bank right now for legal reasons. But listen, I'm telling you, it opens up, to your point, like a different playbook.
Yes.
Right. So like you go from being, let's just say, a lendee or borrower, whatever the term is, and you pay that thing off. And then it's like, oh, so you don't have a mortgage anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe you should open up this thing because you never know what's going to happen. And it was like, oh, my gosh. And it got really, really uncomfortable and actually took a little bit of the wind out of our sails a little bit, because we got there. We were super excited. And again, we didn't literally expect like anyone to give us a piece of chocolate or a cookie or any balloons or something like that or a certificate. Like, there was nothing. But I certainly did not expect to be sort of hunted or upsold on something that I flat out just did not need.
Right.
And it was like, hey, you just eliminated this huge debt. Here's what I recommend.
Right.
Getting into a new debt.
What?
Why would I do that? And I'm going to leave now.
Yeah.
It was awful.
I mean, it's important that we share that story because it's very natural to feel like you have a relationship with a bank because you've given them so much money, and that in some odd way, they've enabled you to achieve this milestone because they're the ones who loaned you the money in the first place. They let you borrow the money in the first place. But I'm going to tell you right now, these are not your friends.
Nope.
They didn't just let you borrow some money. They sold it to you. You paid for that in the form of interest.
And for the record, they were looking forward to dragging this thing out for 15 for the full term so that they could collect all of the interest payments on it. So to your point, you can kind of understand why they're not necessarily excited for you to pay off your debts earlier than they'd originally sold you on.
Yeah. And now that you've proven you're credit worthy, they're definitely going to try and sell you some more.
Absolutely.
Here goes some more credit.
Yeah.
Take this.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's actually a great segue to the next financial milestone, which is achieving that first $100,000 of net worth. You know, some people get there by paying down debt aggressively. So presumably, if you don't have a six-figure mortgage weighing down the liability side of the net worth formula, it's much easier to build up the asset side. And then others get there through just aggressive investing, even while carrying a debt. And the good news is that you don't actually have to pick. You know, it's not a permanent decision like a tattoo. We've actually done both approaches at different stages.
Yeah. And I think certainly for people who earn enough income, or if you're fortunate to have a dual income household, or certainly a dual high income household, mm-hmm. you probably can do a little bit of both. But for those who aren't, or let's say you just don't really have enough money to be able to do both, you're probably experiencing this sort of dreary, slow, and quite frankly, like just boring process of debt payoff. But here's something that I will say. When you're in that mode and you're not investing nearly as much as you potentially could, you're naturally kind of drawn asleep by the impact that that process yes. has on your net worth. And mm-hmm. it's very misleading.
Yeah.
And so what I mean by that is, to your point about how this impacts net worth, just using a simple example, if you were to pay down, let's say, $1,000 a month to a big bill, doesn't matter which one it is, your net worth through the process of eliminating debt or liability is going to increase, all things constant, by that same amount. And so you go through that process until you eliminate that debt. And so that is much, I don't want to say linear, but it's just mm-hmm. a slower and not necessarily like, you know, exciting level of growth. There's still mm-hmm. some fulfillment that comes from that, but it's certainly slow. But when you're done with that, and assuming you take that same $1,000 and you start to invest that money, mm-hmm. that's when you really start to experience much bigger pops. Of course, this is assuming we're in a market and a healthy environment and things are growing. But I think that's really something that's important to call out, because it's really about the rate of growth. The rate of growth through your debt payoff is just naturally going to be significantly slower, but you should really anticipate to see a very different shift. Right? Mm-hmm. It might even go down.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But you shouldn't be alarmed by that, again, depending on what the market is doing. So that's something I definitely want to call out. But that leads me to the second point, which is that it takes a lot longer to get to that first 100K or 100,000 than it does to get to, let's say, 200,000 or mm-hmm. 300,000. Now, I remember we went through that experience as we were, you know, years ago going through this debt payoff in early stages of the accumulation phase, where we would say, oh man, you know, I'm just making it up. Like, October is going to be a big celebration month. I anticipate this. And mm-hmm. obviously we never hit it, you know, because you could never really predict the future. It never actually hit in the month that we ever thought it was going to hit. But I also remember the very first time where it was like, whoa, like just looking at the projections, we might have two or three celebrations in the same year.
Yes.
And so I remember thinking back to like, wow, just how long it took just to get to that first 100,000 mm-hmm. or two or three, whatever it was. And then realizing, all right, well, after a while, like we just celebrated. Where do you want to go now? Like, what do you want to do? And that sounds very elitist. I say that saying, you know, like, you know, that's kind of, most people don't have that. But for those of us who have been there and have gone through those milestones, you know exactly what I'm talking about. And so I'm hoping that those who aren't quite there yet, you know that this is coming. If you stick with it, you continue to pay off your debt, you continue to funnel any of the funds that you used to put towards debt, towards investing. And this is basically what happens. So it won't just be an annual celebration for hitting a milestone. You're going to have to start thinking about, all right, well, it's going to come in April, and then another one's going to come in September. And then, you know what I mean? And it just continues to grow and grow.
Yeah. And part of the reason for the annoying, like, again, is because we didn't do anything for that milestone. Like, part of the challenge in celebrating milestones is that there are the ones where you actually did something, and then there were the other ones that compound interest did her thing with your portfolio. Like, I'm gonna talk about compound interest, because if I ever meet her, I'm gonna buy her dinner, because she's just that special. And I've obviously gendered her as a woman.
I was about to say, how do we know this? How do we know?
They could be something different. Like, who knows? But you're absolutely right that the first 100K is the hardest. And that's because you need a larger balance to really see compound interest do its thing.
Yeah.
That's the paradox of investing and why phrases like the rich get richer exist, because it's true. The more money you have, the harder it works for you, and the more money you earn, you know, insert fine print here, assuming positive returns in a healthy market, blah, blah, blah. But explaining compound interest to non-investors has been one of the biggest creative challenges for me, because it's not immediately intuitive and it contradicts with almost everything that we've been socialized to believe about work and wealth. And it also requires an understanding of math and exponential growth, which a lot of us don't really remember being taught, because yeah. we use linear math like 1 + 1 = 2 way more often in our daily lives. And this doesn't really follow that construct.
Yeah.
So one of the metaphors that I found to be most effective are like fitness metaphors. You know, this idea that your habits in the gym compound and you get stronger every single day, and compound interest works similar to that. But the other thing I found to be really super effective are online calculators. Just allow people to punch in some numbers and go crazy with like imagining what they do with that money.
Yes, I completely agree. I've seen a lot of people's eyes light up when they're punching in financial or online calculators. Those can be a little misleading, though,
mm-hmm.
right? Because some of them are really simple. There's like three factors, and then everything else is based off of some assumptions. And then when you start to introduce more complex online calculators, it also requires a higher level of understanding of mm-hmm. finance, and to your point, exponential math and percentages and costs and all of these other projections. And then I can just put people right back into that period of saying, all right, I'm just going to avoid this altogether. But I completely agree. I think they are very, very motivational for the vast majority of people. So there have been tons of articles and blogs, especially written about this topic and this idea that the first 100,000 is the hardest. I found one in Business Insider that I thought was pretty, really good at just breaking it down in simple terms. And so mm-hmm. it was entitled, How to Invest $100,000 to Make $1 Million. And basically, they break down your average historical returns of the stock market, and they estimate that it would take about 30 years for a $100,000 investment at 7% rate of return with a $155 monthly contribution. So if you've got $100,000 in the market, and you've got 30-year horizon, and you're just slowly throwing in $155 every single month, you can pretty much rest comfortably and assume that that amount of money is going to grow into $1 million in about mm-hmm. 30 years. I remember the first time I came across some of those statistics, and I was like, oh, wow, I can do that. I can yeah. wrap my head around that, which is why I like articles like this, because it really helps give you some simple financial milestones. Get the first 100K, then focus and just continue to just build these habits to invest $155. But one of the early questions that it also made me do is say, well, what if you invested more mm-hmm. than 155? And I think that's the really, really exciting part. And so this article broke that down a little bit as well. So if you had or wanted to achieve it in a shorter time frame, well, basically they said in 25 years or to achieve it in 25 years, you would need to invest $530 a month. If you wanted to reduce that timeline even further, then you could accomplish it in 18 months mm. by investing $1,150. And I absolutely love this because, again, when you go back to how people set financial goals, whether it's, let's say, for a side hustle or paying down debt or, you know, starting a business, this is the sort of thing that I think helps you to create goals and say, all right, well, my goal is to be in a financial position where I can invest $155 or $530 or
right.
$1,150. Or you can say, hey, when we get married, honey, here's what we need to do. We need to make sure that at least half of your paycheck goes towards this goal, because it's going to enable us to do blah, blah, blah.
Right. That's awesome. Now, what about the home ownership milestone? We shared our feelings on home ownership in episode 4, where we discussed whether we consider home ownership to be a luxury. And we both said, yes, it is.
Yes.
But in that episode, we also talked about how home ownership has been the cornerstone of the American dream for decades, and that that milestone, so to speak, isn't as much financial anymore as it is emotional.
Yeah.
And there's nothing wrong with that, of course, unless your emotions cause you to buy in a rush or purchase your dream home before where you can actually afford it. But I feel like this milestone, more than the others, seems to get people really in their feelings. You know, the highs are really high and the lows are really low. And people who don't own a home yet almost feel ashamed of that fact, even though they may be winning in like several other categories.
I completely agree.
Yeah. Your mom went through this.
I think my mom is still going through this. Yes. Mm-hmm. So I think we spoke about this in a previous episode. And so we won't rehash the entire experience that we've had in transitioning my mother out of being a homeowner to now being a renter. But I think the short story is she's an immigrant. She came to this country. And like a lot of people, she's really subscribed to this idea of the American dream. And home ownership was a really, really big part of that. And I think now, even though she's living in an apartment that mm-hmm. we helped to subsidize and is it's the nicest place she's ever lived. Mm-hmm. It's close to her family. She's got access to more parks and high quality food, and there's
gym,
a
gym, grocery store,
everything that she could ever want. She does not feel, and she would never say this, but she still sort of, you know,
wants
expresses frustration about not having some of the things that she believes only comes with having a house. And I think part of it is just natural because, you know, she wants to have a little bit more space, but she also admittedly does not want to have to deal with maintenance and the upkeep, mm-hmm. and certainly doesn't want to have to deal with building up the down payment to actually secure a mortgage to purchase the home. But I think a lot of people are like that. Like they're still, it's very, very difficult to divorce themselves from that idea and from that financial milestone because it's been beaten into their heads over and over again that this is what the picture of success looks like, even though
financially it may not even make a huge difference in your financial outlook.
I'd say in addition to that, if you ask a lot of homeowners whether or not home ownership is a source of stress for them in their life, they will say it's certainly up there in one of the top three. And so, I think it's just one of those things that Americans, and I'm sure other nationalities too, but Americans for sure really, really struggle with.
Yes. So the reason we bring that up is because emotions start to play a much larger role in achieving financial milestones along the way when things just stop being math equations. And so we'll get to the next milestone, which is financial independence, after a quick break. Whenever people talk about financial independence, they always use these like Zelda-like terms, like our journey to financial independence, our quest to financial independence. And I'm guilty of this too, by the way, but it always makes me imagine struggling with the diseases of the Oregon Trail, you know, like dysentery and like these long journeys, these long slogs, because achieving financial independence, regardless of how you define it, whether you're like slow fi, coast fi, barista fi, fat fi, whatever, it takes a while, you know? It takes a while, and the milestones at the stage are a mix of financial and emotional. It's not a matter of just saying, you know, I've saved 25 times my living expenses in my portfolio. It's also grappling with, you know, now that I don't have to work, what am I going to do with my time?
Yep.
Or I've been at work all these years and I need to get to know my family again. Where should I start? Mm-hmm. You know, sometimes the bloggers and the tweeters and the people who have opinions catch a lot of slack sometimes. But I'm so grateful for that community who is detailing their experiences online. You know, we talked about this in last week's episode, but there's a lot that we can learn from other people's experiences, especially when it comes to the emotional parts of achieving these milestones.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. And I'm grateful for those stories too, because I think people are really at a point now where they can admit that, you know, this really isn't about the math, right? You're not even in control
of
a lot of these things, mm-hmm. right? The markets are in control and your job is to just continue to contribute and to do your part. But the vast majority of the growth and the achievement or potential to achieve this particular goal is really outside of your hands. So some people, I think, are pretty transparent about some of these struggles, but I still think that there's a fair bit of people, not just the prominent voices in the personal finance space, but I think just people in general who are still a bit hesitant to open up and admit some of those things. So I'm glad we're sort of leaning into this part of the conversation, because I think something that isn't spoken about enough is how achieving these milestones, while they are worthy of celebration, but how achieving them changes your perspective on life and money as a whole. And mm-hmm. so we just had a brief conversation about compounding interest and how it does a lot of the work for you in terms of growth. But a lot of people don't factor in the role that that has on your sense of achievement or fulfillment.
Yeah.
So if you set a goal that seems really far away at first and then you achieve that goal, and then achieving that goal becomes the norm, you're going to need to adjust your mile markers,
yes.
right? You're going to have, or you're going to risk losing a sense of fulfillment in that effort, or you're going to have to find a completely different source of fulfillment entirely. And I think that's something that a lot of people who find themselves very focused on a financial milestone struggle with, because once they achieve it, it's gone, mm-hmm. and they feel a little bit lost. It's like, well, I thought my life would be
different
or yeah. better, or that people would see me differently. But that is not always the case. And I think it's especially true and relevant for passive investors, mm-hmm. because it's not even like active investors where you can then say, well, my intellect or my ability to synthesize all of this information
into
a strategy is what helped me achieve these goals. When you're a passive investor, you're yeah. really openly admitting that, hey, my job is to show up with some mm-hmm. money, put it in this account, and allow the markets to do their thing. But that's something that, you know, you really have to be mindful of, like how removed you can be from that sense of fulfillment and the impact that that may have on your emotional well-being.
Yes. It's kind of like the saying, money can't buy happiness.
Yes.
You know?
The old trope, money yes. can't buy happiness. It's true. And, it reminds me, I found this quote from Oprah. I'm not one to quote Oprah a lot, but I found this.
I don't know why you live with me.
Are you related to Oprah?
I mean, I quote her a lot.
Oh, okay. Well, maybe I am one to quote Oprah. But she's got a cool net worth of $2.5 billion, according to Forbes. And I found this quote from her, and she says, "I still know I am not my income. I am not the lifestyle my income can afford me. I let money serve its purpose, but I don't live to serve money." And I think that's why we have such a beautiful relationship. And for me, the active word there was relationship.
Yes.
Because when we're talking about going through the process of achieving these financial milestones, you have to acknowledge that your relationship with money has to evolve as you continue to achieve some of these milestones. It's a complete shift from when you started and when you didn't have enough of it to when you do have enough of it. You have to shift the way that you manage money and the way that you approach, and very much so the emotional relationship that you have with your money and your earnings.
Yes. So before we get to our closing thoughts, what advice do you have for the person who is in between financial milestones right now?
I'm not a therapist, but I do think
no,
therapy is I do think therapy is certainly something that a lot of people, if not most people, should consider. And so I think really considering getting a therapist and thinking about that, especially for the hardcore go-getters among us, mm-hmm. Because I'm just telling you right now, and this is not to take the wind out of your sails, but I know how lofty some of these dreams
oh, yeah.
and goals may feel, especially when you haven't achieved them and they seem so far away. But I'm speaking from experience, and I'm speaking on behalf of many hundreds of people that we've met that have already achieved some of their wildest dreams. They get there and they have not, and if they've not done the emotional work, they tend to spiral out of control,
mm-hmm.
right? And so you really, really want to make sure that you're monitoring your mental and emotional health along the way. I'll give two quick recommendations. The first is a new book. It's a relatively new book, but it's very popular. It's called The Psychology of Money. It's written by Morgan Housel, and it's basically doing exactly what the title suggests. It's analyzing the psychology of money. The author shares a bunch of short stories where he explores the strange ways that people kind of think about money and teaches you how to make better sense of it in your life. The second one, which actually has nothing to do with money, but I do think there are some parallels there, is a recent documentary that I saw called The Weight of Gold. And it's about the mental health challenges that Olympic athletes face. And I think what you'll learn as you're watching that film, I want to say it's certainly under 2 hours. But you learn about the cost of what I would say obsession, right? People who are completely obsessed with achieving a goal. And then you can think, you know, hey, Olympics are every 4 years, and it's do or die. Like, you've been training, let's say you're running the 100-meter race or something like that. You're going to train 4 years of your life, and it all boils down to 10 seconds.
Wow.
Right? And so that's something that I think a lot of us who are ambitious and certainly focus on achieving, well, it doesn't matter what it is, millionaire, first $100,000. I'm telling you, it doesn't matter. Do the work. I say learn from some of these other stories and examples and try to find some parallels to make sure that you don't suffer from the same emotional setbacks that some of those people have suffered from.
Love it. Well, my advice is not nearly as profound or deep. Well, maybe it is. Hold on. Let me get it out. I'm actually going to quote the late, great Aaliyah and advise people to work the middle.
Wow.
You know that song, Work the
I
Middle?
I do.
I mean, it's not about financial milestones.
It certainly is not. I'm curious to see where you're going with this.
My point is, I'm describing that space in between financial milestones as the middle. And the problem with the middle is that it's really easy to lose perspective. You know, if you're in the middle of the ocean and you can't see the shoreline anymore, it's easy to feel very lost. It's easy to feel disoriented, even though that's what you signed up for.
Got
you know,
it.
You wanted to float on your back and tread water. Well, you can't do that from the shoreline.
Yeah.
You wanted to dip your fishing pole and you can't really do that from the shoreline. I don't, is that what they say? Dip your fishing pole?
Listen.
I don't fish.
Well.
What is it? Sling it?
This
sling
word choice is getting scandalous.
I don't know the verb for fishing. You wanted to fish and you can't really do that from the shoreline.
You
need to
can.
Go to the, okay. Well, y'all know what I'm saying. Go to the middle. You know, even
closing thoughts. What are your closing thoughts?
My point is that even though the middle is not celebrated nearly as often or as loudly as beginnings or endings, there's a lot of stuff that you can only do in the middle of a transition or in the middle of a milestone. The halfway point is a great time for reflection because you're far enough removed from the situation that you're trying to get yourself away from, but you're not quite at the goal that you're going towards. And it's the perfect time to reflect and tell yourself that you're proud of you and to remind yourself of your whys, you know, why the last milestone wasn't enough and why the next one is what you want. It's really the ability to look at your life almost from like an outsider's perspective because you're not in the thing that you want yet.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I get that. I get that. My closing thoughts are to think of your financial milestones like you do children. Now, obviously, this only makes sense for those of us who are parents. But if you're not, I'm sure you've heard that they grow fast. And it is very, very true. And so at first, your goal with your child may just be to get them to sleep through the night. Or it may just be to have one, like just to have one to deal with. Right.
Yeah.
Like that in and of itself is a huge milestone. And then it's like, how do we get them to go to sleep? And then it's like, all right, how can I get that first smile or that first big giggle? And then before you know it, it's like they're crawling, they're walking, they're talking, they've got a point of view, they're making demands. And every single week becomes a new set of milestones, not just a single milestone that may have taken you months to get there. And the same is true when it comes to managing your money. And as we talk about making that shift, you know, there's, I think, a bit of another parallel there to parenting, where it's like you actually have to step into this role to parent your money, and your role as a parent changes as your money grows. If you have a parent, you know that, right? Like you need them to be a guardian, you need them to be a protector, but as you get older, they need to shift their relationship with you. So they're still in your life, but the way that they support you and the way that you support them is very different. And so think of it as more of being a parent and your money as your child. And that probably got a little bit messy, too. But I think the idea there, I think, hopefully came through. So those are my closing thoughts.
Yes. My closing thought is just building on, you know, the last messed up metaphor of fishing. But if you're in the middle of milestones, it means that you already have enough information to know that you're setting achievable goals and you have enough time to change direction. So it's the perfect time to be experimental and just focus on making yourself feel more capable every single day. You know, don't worry about whether or when you're going to hit the next one. Just focus on those little things that make you feel more capable.
I love it. Well, on that note, we've got a little milestone of our own. I want to get to 100 five-star reviews. So help us out. Thank you for listening to another episode of the Rich and Regular podcast presented by Success. And if you wouldn't mind helping us achieve that goal, we would greatly appreciate if you left a rating and a review. Till next time.
See y'all next week.